And eventually it leads you to boobs.com. Like, that's the pipeline. You watch Intuition by Jewel music video on demand. And then someday you're on your iPod Touch in the bathroom looking up boobs.com. Intuition Jewel to boobs.com. There is an argument to be made that that's a straight shot. We made other stops, but eventually that is where you end up, is boobs.com.
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight, and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, I love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, who is so eager to wish all of you a very happy Pride. Happy Pride Month, from one bisexual to many, many more. Clocked your tea just then, okay? I know many a bisexual listen to this podcast, and thank God. Because I love to be in community with other bisexuals. God, is there any a better place to be? Couple days into Pride Month, I've been having a great time, but I'm not without my critiques of how the month has gone for me so far. Nay, I do have things to complain about. Because I believe that during the month of June, I should be in a pure state of bliss, experiencing nothing but joy. I should be making out for sure. And my tits should be out almost 100% of the time. We're working on all of these things. Now, I also believe that Pride Month is a time where no one should piss me off. And if you do, it's biphobic. And really, it's biphobic year round. The same way it's also fatphobic year round. Don't piss me off. Don't piss me off. And if you do, bad news bears. All right. It's Pride Month. I deserve to be unburdened by any feelings of frustration, anger, disgust, sadness, any of it. These are things that I shouldn't know about this month. Keep them far away from me. Now, unfortunately, I've not been safe from these feelings as of yet. What a shame. What a shame. What a shame. Biphobia on June 1st in the Regal Union Square Cinema, because some of y'all pissed me the fuck off. No, you might be asking yourself, Maddie, why the fuck were you at the Regal Cinema at Union Square? Do you hate yourself and want bedbugs? And that's an awesome question. And many have asked that, and many will continue to ask that. I am part of the many. I have asked that. I've said that so many times. I always say that. That's what I'm known for. But I was at the Regal Cinemas in Union Square because I was invited by my dear friend Kendall to attend a early screening of the first 28 minutes of the upcoming 28 Years Later movie, followed by a Q&A from Danny Boyle, the director, Jodie Comer, and Aaron Taylor Johnson, the two leads in that movie, followed by a screening of the 2003 movie 28 Days Later. Are we following? There's a whole lot of 28s that just happened. The first 28 minutes of 28 Years Later, followed by a Q&A, followed by 28 Days Later. Okay, awesome experience. Was so excited to be there. I've never seen 28 Days Later, but obviously I've heard so much about it, and I do understand that it's kind of hard to get your hand on these days. Some of these movies are just sort of buried on the internet in 420p, which this movie, even on the big screen, was serving 420p, which I loved. All the Letterboxd reviews are people being like, was this shot on a fucking Nintendo DS? Was this shot on an LG refrigerator? And it does look like that. But it's got its own charm to it. I kind of love that that's what the resolution looks like. Witnessing a video in 420p on a big screen at the Regal Cinemas in Union Square. Oh, these vibes are feeling really good to me right now. So anyways, go to watch this movie. I was super excited for the Q&A. Honestly, I knew that Danny Boyle was going to be there. I didn't realize that Jodie Comer was going to be there. Aaron Taylor Johnson, whatever. Cool. He's here too. Jodie Comer, though. Come on. Jodie Comer heads. My Mad Fat Diary heads. Let's fucking go. The second I saw her in person, chills. Chills along all of my arms and legs. My Mad Fat Diary is one of the most important television series that I've ever consumed in my life. Consuming that as a high schooler struggling with her body image, struggling with binge eating disorder, like, I can't tell you how intensely that TV show changed my goddamn life. And Jodie Comer is one of the leads in that show. So, loved seeing her, was in such a good mood. And obviously, the second that the Q&A starts happening, people are taking photos, people are taking videos. I don't know what the range of people invited to this event was, but obviously there are a lot of influencers and content creators in the audience. Fine. You expect there to be phones out during the Q&A. Do I sometimes roll my eyes when people have their phones up for the entire time? Yeah, I do. The same way I do at concerts and shit. Like, to have your phone out and take a couple videos and pictures throughout the show, fantastic. Love it. Do I think you should at some point in the show put your phone away? Yeah. Usually how I do it is, like, you know, I'll take my phone out, I'll take a couple pictures, I'll switch, I'll get like a 10-second video, and then I'll put my phone away. Because I want to be able to, like, experience the thing that's happening right in front of me. Both things are important to me. I love a good, you know, documenting of the moment, keeping it and saving it for myself forever. I do feel like I'm in the perfect middle ground with these kinds of topics. Some people are like, wow, how dare you exist living through the screen of your phone? Do you ever look up and just experience the world with all your five senses? And then there's other people who are like, totally committed to getting every single second recorded. I am perfect. So I sit clean in the middle. And everyone shut up. And nobody gets to disagree with me during Pride Month. That's the other thing that's happening this month, just so you're all aware. I believe that there is room for both, because looking back at my childhood and the things that I recorded as a teen that are now, you know, immortalized on my hard drive and at one point on the internet, I feel like I remember a lot more of my childhood vividly because I have videos to look back on it. Like the family vacation we took in 2011, why would I remember any of that beyond, like, oh, okay, this song came out the week before we went on the trip and I listened to it the whole airplane ride there, like, or, you know, maybe something crazy bananas happens on the trip that my family talks about forever. But then the little things you sort of slowly forget about. But because I've recorded so much of my life, I actually do feel like I remember more of it because there's just more to look back on. I'm a very nostalgic girl. Anyways, all of that to say, I'm pro capturing the moment, but I think life is all about balance, people. You capture the moment and then you put it away and you soak up what time you have left with the moment. Anytime I go somewhere and people are just like recording the whole fucking thing and you're not like a designated photographer or videographer, I'm like, what are we doing, people? You're not even going to use all that. Like, nobody actually cares. you're going to use a clip of that as B-roll in your vlog or put it under voiceover for TikTok, and that's going to be it. There's no way you needed to record the whole thing. You just didn't. Anyways, I digress. The only reason I'm mad about it is because they were blocking my view. And so I just had to, you know, veer my head around these people holding their phones up with their arms directly up. Anyways, I'm also being a hater because what they did after this. So let me just get there. All right. Let me just get to the real offense of this whole thing. We haven't even gotten there yet. The thing that really pissed me off was that after the Q&A, obviously, the movie, the feature presentation starts going. 28 days later. Dun, dun, dun. I'm so excited, okay? The rage virus, it's here. Zombies, apocalypse move. Hello? What just happened? Apocalypse movie. We're having a great time. When I tell you that I look around the fucking theater and there are so many people on their goddamn phones. It was astronomical. Astronomical. At the start of the film, there was some guy walking around the theater with his flashlight on because he's like, he lost his poster. He's like, does anyone know where my poster is? He's got his flashlight on. I'm like, dude, time and place. Like, what is happening? Turn that shit off. You lost your poster. Sayonara. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. I don't know how we can help you. Let me watch the movie, bro. people in front of me are taking the time to answer all of their texts, every email they've ever been sent. They're responding to marketing emails. I swear to God, there was nothing, no notification that went untouched by these people. They were just sitting there scrolling brightness on high, babe. You better believe it. You better fucking believe it. Brightness on high. I damn near lost the plot entirely when I saw the girl in front of me, her camera, her like point and shoot, clearly had like Bluetooth connection to her phone and could airdrop all the photos from the camera directly onto her phone. I watched her in the middle of this fucking movie airdrop all the photos from her camera to her phone and start editing them in Lightroom. I almost started kicking seats. I almost started kicking seats and being a bitch. And I've warned you guys that I'm in my bitch era now, and I don't give a fuck, and I'm gonna be a bitch, and I don't care. And if you are gonna be a freak in the movie theater, then guess what? I'm gonna be a bitch. Unfortunately, I was not a bitch in this scenario. I should have been. I absolutely should have been. Unfortunately, I am a bitch who's afraid of confrontation. So I said nothing while I watched this person edit several tens of photos on Lightroom because their followers simply couldn't wait to see this photo of them at a movie screening where there was a Q&A that happened, except they didn't actually enjoy the movie at all. They simply wanted to flex that they were there and were in the flesh of these celebrities without actually engaging in the piece of media that we were here to consume in the first place. I fucking cannot. Like, it actually makes me feel so mad, because I'm like, your followers, I promise you, don't even give a fuck like that. Nobody fucking cares, okay? I don't know about you guys, but the people that I follow on social media that I feel genuinely inspired and excited by are people who are passionate and, you know, love talking about and getting into the weeds about whatever it is that they're interested in, fired up about, passionate about that week. I like people with opinions and like heart and that really give a shit about whatever it is that they're sharing about. Whether it is bigger issues and topics or something as minuscule as a fucking movie they liked, a song they liked, something that made them smile that week. I don't give a shit. What I cannot stand is people who don't have passion and just do everything for the optics. Going to a movie screening and not watching the movie, simply just being there to take photos of the celebrities so that you can post on your Instagram story and be like, see, I was in the same room as these celebrities. Without actually engaging with the fucking movie. Like, I hate you. I do. I hate you. I wish that someone sat in your seat that was a real movie lover, okay? And that was excited to see that goddamn movie. Instead, you were here absolutely fucking up the visuals of this movie with your iPhone screen on 100% brightness like a fucking fool. And I see these things happen and I'm like, I think that we need to bring back bullying. But then I'm not confident enough to do it. Like, I'm not brave enough to be the bully, you guys. I need to bring someone with me. I need like a pocket bully. A pocket bully that I can take with me to bully the people that I think deserve to be bullied, right? There's many people, so often, the people who have been bullied in this life didn't deserve it. And the people that do deserve to be bullied are getting away scot-free, okay? Movie talkers, movie texters, movie Lightroom photo editors, y'all deserve to be bullied. You do. I am pro-bullying people who think it's appropriate to edit Lightroom photos in the middle of a movie. Talking to you. Talking to you, whoever the hell you were. I promise it wasn't that serious. And if you didn't want to watch the movie, you actually could have just left. Like, I would have respected that more if you came to the Q&A just to hear, you know, Aaron Taylor Johnson and Jodie Comer speak and see them in the flesh. I get it for Jodie Comer alone. Be like, I just wanted to see Jodie Comer. I fucking love her. I didn't care about this movie. I would have been like, real as hell. Come see the Q&A and then fucking leave then. Why are you sitting here on your phone? Clearly you don't. Go home, please. I'm begging you, actually. I would love it if you just left. But unfortunately, none of the such happened. And I just believe that that never should have happened during Pride Month. And it's biphobic that they were sitting right in front of me. So that's strike one, okay? I better not have to come on mic and tell you about a strike two next week. Because if we hit strike three before the end of Pride Month, I'm going nuclear. And there's nothing anyone can do about it. In the spirit of Pride Month, I've been reflecting on what the most bisexual thing I've ever done is. And really, there are many things that come to mind. I don't know why, but I do feel like getting hit by a car while wearing a slutty cheerleader costume covered in blood. That feels like a very bisexual thing that happened to me just then. You know, laying on the concrete. Spared my life by just a few short feet, covered in fake blood, liquid latex, and a slutty cheerleader costume. See, that to me feels uniquely bisexual. I also just feel like Pisces in general is a very bisexual star sign. I do feel like astrologers chime in. Okay. Astrologers, what do we think? I think that Pisces is maybe the most bisexual astrology sign. I can't think of a more bisexual sign, to be honest with you. That's, I'm locking it in. And fuck you. Fuck anyone who disagrees with me. But above everything, I fear that the most bisexual thing that I have ever done is total my car while listening to I Will by Sky Ferreira. That was a bisexual activity, for sure. And I maintain the fact that it wasn't my fault. There was no other cars on the road, so I still don't really know how this happened. I was locked in, I was paying attention, and then next thing you know, I was swerving off the road. So either my tire blew, which is what we suspected happened, my tire blew and I lost control of the car and I slammed into a pole. Well, I didn't really slam into it. I like kind of swiped it. And so it swiped the entire right side of my car and knocked off my mirror and like fucked up the right side of my car. And it was an old car. So I think the bar of which made it totaled was significantly lower. Loved that car though. It was a Volvo. Had absolutely no perks. I had a binder full of CDs that I burned that I kept in my passenger seat so that people could plug in all of my playlists. It was way better than having an aux cord or having fucking Bluetooth. Boo! Lame! Bring back CD players and having to burn CDs for your car. Okay? And this, I totaled it right after I graduated high school. So that car is a special place in my heart because nobody else ever had that car. It was my dad's car. And then it became mine when I turned 16. And then I drove that all throughout high school. And then my siblings never got to drive it because I totaled it. And that is a very eldest daughter thing to do, right? Something had to be just for me. I was here first, okay? I had 2 years on this planet with just my parents. 2 years of my life, I had to share them with no one. Sometimes I need to be brought back to those days. I need to have things that are just for me and not for you. I'm tired of sharing. Didn't want to share that Volvo. So I totaled it. The demon took control of me in that moment. It was a straight shot. It was literally just like a straight road in the middle of my town. I was driving back from getting my eyebrows tinted. Oh, this is the other part of that story. I was driving back from getting my eyebrows tinted. And at the time, I really loved like super dark, chunky brows. And so usually the lady that tinted my eyebrows would send me home with the tint still on. And then I would take it off when I got home so they would be extra dark. But naturally, when you total your car, it sort of, you know, sets off the timeline there a little bit. So I totaled my car while listening to I Will by Sky Ferreira. Banger, by the way. So maybe the tire blew. Maybe it didn't. and I just was spacing out and sort of veered off the road. And by the time I realized it was too late, I don't know. I don't remember. I can't tell you what happened. This was 2015. I pull off to the side of the road and into this parking lot of a local pub. And my grandfather lived like a 5-minute walk down the road from there. So I call my parents crying. They send my grandfather out and he is like covering up the evidence. He's like picking up the parts of my car that have been scattered all over the road. And there was a hole in this pole for a long time. They fixed it at some point. But there was this pole in my hometown that like there was a chunk taken out of it. And it was because I hit it. But yeah, my grandfather was there picking up all of the fucking remnants from the car. And the wood from the pole and throwing it in the woods. And my parents, somebody showed up. I think my mom showed up, or maybe it was my dad. I don't fucking remember. So one of my parents showed up and they just looked at me and they're like, "Your fucking eyebrows." And I was like, oh, no. So I went into this pub and like tried to get my tint off my eyebrows with a fucking paper towel, and by then it was too late. I looked like Oscar the Grouch, which that in itself feels like an inherently bisexual experience. So I guess we'll never know why it is that I totaled my car. Maybe the tire did blow. Maybe it did. Maybe I zoned out. I don't remember. I don't remember. I think the tire blew. I maintained that I was paying attention, which is why the whole thing was so confusing to me, because I remember both hands on the wheel. We're talking 10 and 2, eyes looking straight ahead. And then all of a sudden I'm sideswiping a pole. I don't know what happened. It happened all so quickly. I was locked in though. So however it happened, I maintain it wasn't my fault. May it have been the tire blowing and sort of veering me in that direction, or me being possessed by a spirit while listening to I Will by Sky Ferreira and just fulfilling my destiny in that way. Additionally, I was watching the Renee Rapp little Gaydar episode that went live a couple days ago. And a question that Anania asked Renee was, what music video was your gay awakening? And I thought about my answer for this, and honestly, I have so many. Like, thinking about music videos and movies and just like pop culture moments in general, I think I more come to mind every time I think of this question. It feels like just a never-ending well of answers that I stumble upon every time this is asked, because in the moment I didn't realize that that's what it was. You know, I knew I felt drawn to these pieces of media, and I understand now what was happening, but back then I was like, I just love it a lot, and it makes me feel awesome and good. First music video that came to my mind when answering the question of what music video was your gay awakening, first one that came to my brain, easy, no contest, was Start All Over by Miley Cyrus. Dude, that music video, fucks. It is sick. After I saw that video, I knew that I loved several things, okay? First thing that I knew I loved was chunky highlights. Extensions that are clearly strapped to that motherfucking head, okay? We don't need to blend your extensions. I love a little bit of like, just like a good amount of trash. It's just kind of awesome. The chunky blonde highlights clipped in. I love it so much. That's the first thing I knew I loved. Second thing I knew I loved was videos that are shot all in one take, or that appear that they're shot all in one take. Loving that. Seems awesome. Third thing I knew I loved was when women dress a little bit alternative, a little bit, you know, badass. Miley came out with, oh, she's wearing like a band tee and a leather vest, tight pants, boots. boots, and she's got suspenders that are hanging down. Ugh. Yeah. No, that was awesome. That video was fucking awesome. I feel like Miley Cyrus, Hilary Duff, for a brief period, Demi Lovato. I feel like I was mostly Miley Cyrus and Hilary Duff that I was like in awe of as a child. Looking back now, like my child bedroom, there were no photos of men on those walls. Not even fucking one, bro. Okay. We didn't give a fuck. We didn't care. It was Miley, Demi, Selena, Britney, Hilary Duff. It was any woman. Yes. Any woman that I loved was on those walls as a child. No men were allowed. Where it switched for me, there was a couple of times. I feel like the first time that I started having like a celebrity crush on a man was Jonathan Taylor Thomas, which is the timelines of this don't make any sense. I had a crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas when I was in the seventh grade, which was 2009, 2010. At that point, Jonathan Taylor Thomas had been disappeared from the public eye for several years. I think he was in like Tuck Everlasting, or no, it was Tom Sawyer or something like that. It was like the Tom Sawyer movie that Jonathan Taylor Thomas is in. They showed it to us, like the entire seventh grade class went to the auditorium to watch the Tom Sawyer movie. Jonathan Taylor Thomas was in it, and I was like, holy fuck. That one right there is so sexy. So I went home and I made a bunch of collages to put as my screensaver on my iPod and you know, my EEPC, those little mini computers. Made a DIY collage of a bunch of photos of Jonathan Taylor Thomas from the 90s that I was obsessed with. So I had a crush on Jonathan Taylor Thomas from the 90s in 2009. And that was the first time that I was like, ooh, yeah. But before that, I didn't give a fuck about any men. Or the only male artists that I liked was Aerosmith and Simple Plan range. And that's men that wear eyeliner. So the bisexual is continuing to check out. Who gives a fuck about Zac Efron? Not me. I didn't give a single fuck. High School Musical came out and I was way more interested in Ashley Tisdale and Vanessa Hudgens. Zac Efron was just boring to me. That is just a man. I would rather pay attention to the girly pops that are serving me way more to chew on. Ashley Tisdale specifically. I love the girlies that bring drama and cunt. Okay? And Sharpay was serving cunt constantly. I just, looking back now, none of my fascinations were ever on men or boy characters or anything. I never cared. I was always more interested in the female characters, the women, the girly pops, okay? And then I feel like the real turning point after Jonathan Taylor Thomas was One Direction. But at that point, it's like, well, everyone who liked One Direction was gay anyways. Do you know what I mean? Like the turning point where like the posters on my walls went from like Miley Cyrus and Hilary Duff, and it eventually switched to Lady Gaga, major Lady Gaga, Kesha. Then we're adding in One Direction. We're adding in a certain YouTube prank group that will not be named. We're adding in Cher Lloyd, Little Mix, LMFAO, unexplainably. But you know what? Maybe I'll still stand by that for the weird vibes of it all. Ahead of my time. Okay. I saw someone say that the first LMFAO album, I'm forgetting what it's called. I think it's called Party Rock. But Party Rock Anthem is not on that album. Don't even think about it. We're talking Yes, I'm in Miami, bitch. Little hipster girl. We're talking that era LMFAO. Somebody said that that album Walked so that Brat could run. And that comparison did make me giggle. And I kind of loved it. It's one of those things that it's, you either get it, you see the vision, or you don't. So if you don't see the vision, just fuck off about it, okay? Because us LMFAO heads that were deep in the audience for this uncle-nephew duo doing whatever the fuck that was. Like, I had an LMFAO poster in my bedroom, unexplainably. Point of all of this being is that I do feel like the YouTube prank group was, like, very straight of me. Like, that was derogatory. And this is why they can't be named, right? Because I don't know what happened to me in that era. But, like, to love One Direction, to be a One Direction fan, that is still super gay. So it's like my interest in male musicians and artists, my interest in celebrity men, it has never been super straight. Like, I remember, what was the guy that everyone was obsessed with? Ryan Sheckler. It's like some skateboard guy, I think. I don't know who the hell that is, and I don't care to know. Don't tell me. I was busy having crushes on gay men making music videos on YouTube in 2011, okay? Do I look like the type of bitch that would have had a crush on Ryan Sheckler? I don't even definitively know who that is. No, okay? I had a crush on Zayn Malik and the 90s version of Jonathan Taylor Thomas. Okay, wait. Other music videos that had an impact on me. With Love by Hilary Duff. And this is the music video where she wears like a little black bob wig. I don't think she wears it for the full video. I think there's some shots of her as her beautiful blonde self. And then she also has some shots where she's in this like black wig and she's sort of undercover and she's trying to escape. And she's like running through the stairwell of this fucking place. I don't know what the hell was going on in this music video. All I know is that I found Hilary Duff in a wig to be very compelling and very sexy. There was something very like Totally Spies about it. You know what I mean? Like women undercover in trench coats and wigs. Serve. Okay. That was what I needed at that time. Another one, Intuition by Jewel. Most of that music video is kind of random where she's just like walking along the streets. But then at the end of the music video, she's in a white tank top and there's a bunch of firefighters spraying her down with water. And she's like, ah. And it's like the sexy firefighters with Jewel covered in water in this white tank top. Yeah, come on. I was cheering when I saw that. We were on demand scrolling through music videos to watch. God, miss that. Miss that era of being like, what music videos do I have on demand right now? Scrolling through on Comcast on the TV in my parents' bedroom, watching Intuition by Jewel and being like, holy shit. I don't know what this is, but I love it. And eventually it leads you to boobs.com. Like, that's the pipeline. You watch Intuition by Jewel music video on demand. And then someday you're on your iPod Touch in the bathroom looking up boobs.com. And in my house, the Wi-Fi only worked on one side of the house and my bedroom was on the entire opposite side. So the Wi-Fi never worked in my bedroom. So if I wanted to look at something good, I had to walk to the other side of the house, type in boobs.com, let a picture load up, and then I'd close my phone and go back to my room. And then I'd open it back up and be like, whoa. And actually, there's other things in this pipeline, but Intuition Jewel to boobs.com, there is an argument to be made that that's a straight shot. We made other stops, but eventually that is where you end up, is boobs.com. The other stop before we get to boobs.com that feels obvious to me is when I watched Good Luck Chuck, which is a terrible movie. I don't really remember it that much, but from what I do remember, it's not good. But I remember accidentally watching Good Luck Chuck because it was number one in the iTunes store for movies or rentals. I don't know if it was officially number one in the iTunes store, but I know it was in like the top charts for movies on iTunes. And I rented it on my iPod Touch to watch in the car when we were driving up to Maine one weekend. And it was an R-rated movie, which we were allowed to watch. Like, my parents used to go to the Red Box and rent a DVD for us to watch, or a VHS tape. I don't fucking remember at what point they became DVDs instead of VHS tapes, but they would go to the Red Box and get a movie for us to watch and just leave us with it and go off to dinner. I watched Step Brothers right when it came out with my siblings while my parents were out at dinner one night. When Step Brothers came out, when I was probably in like sixth grade, which meant my siblings were in fourth grade and second grade. So my parents never gave a fuck about that. But there was always some part of me that, like, I felt a lot of panic as a child about doing the right thing, even if I knew that my parents didn't care. Like, I was so afraid to tell my mom that I liked the song Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake because the word sexy was in it, even though I knew that my parents didn't care what music I listened to or what was said in the music. And my mom would always listen to Sexy Back in the car, and she loved the song. But I remember feeling like terrified to tell her that I like liked that song and I listened to it in my spare time. I felt the same way about Girlfriend by Avril Lavigne. I don't know why. I don't know why. I think sometimes I heard that other parents, like my friend's parents, didn't let them listen to certain music or watch certain movies, wear certain clothes. And then I would start getting afraid that my parents were going to say the same things, because they never would be like, they would never explicitly be like, yes, that's okay. But they would never explicitly say, no, this is not okay. They just like never cared. We never talked about it in my household. We had like, there was just no rules. It was like, sure, do whatever you want. I don't care. Or like the one time I was watching Secret Life of the American Teenager on my dad's laptop, and my mom saw that I was watching it, and I was doing it secretly because I was like worried that she was going to be mad at me or tell me I couldn't watch it or something. And when she saw that I was watching it, she just came over to me and she was like, it's fine that you're watching that show, but if you are going to watch it, we should probably have a conversation about teen pregnancy and whatever else. And I remember being really upset about it and feeling like just embarrassed that she saw me watching that show, or like that she knew I was curious about it. And I don't know why, because she was very normal about it. My mom was just like, yeah, that's totally fine that you want to watch that. Let's just like have a conversation about it. And I was like, this is humiliating. So I don't know where that came from, because that definitely was not from my parents. They never cared. But I, for whatever reason, had so much like guilt and worry about what I was consuming, or that I was going to get in trouble for it for some reason, even though that never happened. Anyways, I rented Good Luck Chuck on my iPod for this car ride. Rented Good Luck Chuck, and I was sitting in the middle seat in the back. I had a hoodie that I was like camped up inside of, so you couldn't see the screen, you couldn't see my head. I was fully inside of this hoodie watching Good Luck Chuck. And there is a scene in that movie where, I don't remember all the details, so sorry if I get something wrong, not that any of you gave a fuck or any of you are going to watch this dumbass fucking movie, but there is a scene in that movie where I believe she's there is a scene in that movie, or maybe several scenes in that movie, where they're at like a plastic surgeon's office talking about getting a breast augmentation. And so there's a lot of boobs in that movie, just like straight up like boobs, boob city. And I remember watching this movie in my sweatshirt being like, oh my God, I'm obsessed. I'm literally obsessed. And I think that at that time, and this is true for a lot of things, looking back now, I'm like, well, that's gay. That was super gay of you. But at the time, my perception of it was more that I had like a real desire to be like these women. Not that I liked them, but that I wanted to be them. So when I'm watching Good Luck Chuck and I'm like really excited that I'm seeing boobs, in my head I was like, well, obviously it's just because I want to have big juicy boobs. Obviously that's the only reason why. And when I go to boobs.com and watch porn and look at all of these photos of women naked and feel really excited by it, that's just because I dream of a day where I am like a real grown-up woman like that. Like, no, it's not. No, it's not, okay? You didn't need to watch scissoring. You didn't need to watch cunnilingus videos on a loop to know that you dreamt of one day experiencing cunnilingus. You know what I mean? I wasn't consuming this stuff because I was like, I can't wait to just be a woman. I can't wait to be just like this woman. It was like, well, yeah, maybe part of it. You can't wait to be just like this woman with beautiful, gorgeous tits. Maybe you become that eventually, little Maddie. Don't you worry. But that's not the whole thing. You don't just want to be like her. You also want to be with her. It's not just that you're picturing yourself as her. You are picturing yourself with her. But we couldn't talk about that part of it yet. We weren't there yet. We were figuring it out. We were still confused. And then obviously, one of my like biggest like bisexual awakenings in music was Lady Gaga. Lady Gaga. The Telephone music video, Gaga and Beyonce. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Are you kidding? Gaga with the hair in the Coke cans with the cigarette sunglasses and the leather. There's just something about that aesthetic. Like the blonde hair with super dark eyeshadow, red lipstick, leather, you know, fishnet tights, high heel lace-up leather boots. Like that kind of, that is my kryptonite. That is the thing that I will die for over and over again. Bleach blonde hair with dark makeup. Serving cunt in a bunch of leather. Paired with Beyonce. They're like two women on the run. That whole video is gay. I love it. It's awesome. That was a bisexual awakening for me. And then just, you know, we move into the Born This Way era. And it's like, I was way too excited about all of that. Oh, yeah. You're an ally that can't stop crying when you engage in any of what Lady Gaga put out during the Born This Way era. Like, I bet. I bet you're just an ally. Also, I was way too fascinated and interested in like Lady Gaga's ass. Like there's a line where it's like, oh, well, we're just appreciating what any normal person can appreciate. She's Gorgina. She's Gorgine. And she has an incredible ass. 100%. And also, there's a line where that maybe becomes an interest of yours that is more than just knowing when to appreciate a beautiful woman. Knowing when to appreciate a beautiful woman and knowing when that woman is just your epitome of what you find beautiful and attractive. Like, yeah, actually. Lady Gaga is everything that I find attractive in a woman. She has everything. There is nothing she doesn't have. She is what I want. But I think that was another example of me. It was so easy for me to just be like, oh, well, I just want to be like her. I am just in deep admiration of her versus, no, I'm attracted to her. Yeah. Yeah, we just didn't know. We didn't know the difference then. I was always going to take the conclusion of like, well, no, obviously I just really admire her and think she's awesome and beautiful and want to be just like her. That was always going to be the conclusion. This is the conclusion that every bisexual person comes to when they've grown up accepting their attraction to men, and their attraction to women comes much later on. I'm sure of it. I'm sure that we've all explained it to ourselves in that way. And then obviously we're talking movies. John Tucker Must Die. That like kiss that happens between Sophia Bush and Brittany Snow in the car. Or do they kiss? Or do they almost kiss? I think they almost kiss. Didn't matter. Them almost kissing was enough for me. All right. Also, men in thongs. Yeah. John Tucker Must Die knew exactly what they were doing when they gave us the Sophia Bush, Brittany Snow moment, and they made men wear thongs. They said, come here, little bitch boy. I gave you a red thong. You better put this baby on and scale the building for me so I can fuck you, actually. You think you're going to fuck me? Absolutely not. You put this little number on and make your way over here, big boy. Such a good movie. Tailored specifically for bisexuals. Also, Pirates of the Caribbean. Everyone in that movie is so hot. Keira Knightley was definitely another one of those like early actresses for me that I saw her and I was like, wow, what's going on? What's going on here? Also, just like the garb of pirates in general, or like any woman in a pirate movie with like, it's just boob city with like the corseted dresses, the bustiers, like, it was so easy for me to just be like, it's just because I want to have beautiful, juicy tits. It's not because I want to touch someone else's. I just want to touch my own. I have that, okay? I'm just hoping that someday I get to touch and admire boobs that look like that. And they can be my own. And I don't have to think about it on other people. It's just me. I'm just excited for me to have boobs like that, maybe. Turn it on yourself. Deflect. But it's so funny now, looking back at like all of these pivotal moments. There was one of the final pivotal moments that I had in college. This is a turning point for me to like really realize that I was actually bisexual. And it wasn't just a fleeting thought inside my brain, or it wasn't just me admiring these women or wanting to be like these women. It was me liking these women. I'm pretty sure I've told this story on my YouTube channel before, but there was this girl that I went to college with. She was a year or two older than me, but I remember sophomore year of college, I was in the library and I just thought she was so beautiful. I would always admire her from a distance and just be like, ooh, she's like really beautiful. It kind of makes me nervous. And she must have been in like a gender and sexuality studies class, because one day she was walking around the library asking a bunch of people if they would take a survey for her class. And she came up to me and asked me if I would take this survey for her class. And I was like, yeah, of course, sure. I sit down with her computer to take this test to do the survey. And obviously one of the first questions on this survey was asking what your sexuality was. And I remember sitting there for a while, unsure of what to answer, because at that point I had never told anyone that I had questioned my sexuality ever. It was something that I barely even talked about to myself, let alone other people. And so when faced with answering this question, it was like, well, I should put straight, right? Because that is what I am to everyone that knows me. And that is what is true about me, I guess. but I felt a panic at the idea of writing straight on this survey because I didn't want her to think that I was straight. I didn't want her to think that I wouldn't be into her because I would, and I am. And I was like, whoa, wait. I don't want to put straight on this survey because it doesn't feel like an accurate label for me, because the woman who gave me this survey is one that I find really attractive, that I've sort of had a crush on from a distance. We went to a small college. Every time I see her around, I'm like, whoo, there she is. And I don't want her to think that I'm not queer. That was a moment for me where I was like, okay. You want her to know you're interested in women too, in case she might be into you. And I want to say it was probably shortly after that that I told my friend Ellie that I thought I was bi. And she was the first person I ever talked to about it. We lived together at that time, sophomore year of college. So I think that, to my memory, is like one of the last moments that I had where I was like, hey. That maybe felt like the most direct way that I had to confront it, where like eventually it got to a point where it was like, oh, I have to confront these crushes that I have and these women that I find myself attracted to, because here I was in this moment where one of the women that I thought was so beautiful was asking me for my sexuality. And I didn't want to close myself off from the opportunity of being with her. And I was like, well, sounds like you want a little bit more than just to be like her. I think you want to be liked by her, actually. So, anyways, that was that. And she's still beautiful. Anyways. Anyways, who want to make out this Pride Month? Anyways, who want to kiss during Pride Month? Coming to the end of the show here, I wanted to dip into the submission box and just do a submission or two. I know we've been talking for a while now. But I saw one in the box that seemed quite fitting for Pride Month. So let's get into it. Hi, Maddie. As Pride Month approaches, I was hoping you could give me some advice and perspective on my slight queer identity crisis. I am a 29-year-old bisexual woman who has been with my partner, a cis man, for 10 years and married for almost 3. He's truly my best friend and my absolute ideal partner, and I love being with him. When I came to terms with my bisexuality, we were already a year into our relationship and he was super supportive. I told him that I wanted to remain monogamous and he agreed. We have been monogamous our entire relationship and intend to stay that way for the foreseeable future. I'm also a monogamous girly. So basically, I've never been with a woman. I feel very connected to the queer side of my identity and know that I'm valid in how I feel. However, I can't shake the feeling that because I'll never have a romantic or sexual experience with a woman, I will never truly be part of the community. I don't want to open my relationship to have those experiences because I am a one-partner type of person. My friends are actively open in their marriages to explore their sexualities, so they can't really give me realistic advice. While I'm 100% happy in my current relationship, I still mourn the alternate version of me that did express her bisexuality openly. How can I move on from this and accept that I'm still queer regardless of the fact that I never have and likely never will have a true queer experience? Well, first of all, I just want to say that I think it's totally normal that you would feel like you have to mourn this version of yourself that currently exists but can't necessarily exist in the most idealized way. You know, mourning this potential of a life where the version of you that exists right now could have explored, you know, your comfortability with your sexuality more. If only you could have felt this curiosity and openness and acceptance of your bisexuality before you met your current beautiful, wonderful partner, so that you could have experienced, you know, all of yourself in that way. I think that makes total sense that you would feel some kind of mourning or loss over the part of yourself that you don't intend to explore because of how life has worked out and how the timelines of everything have worked out. I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think it's okay to mourn that. As someone who is also monogamous, and I think if I was in your situation, I would probably feel exactly the same way. Like if I had entered a long-term relationship with a man before really realizing my interest in women and getting to a comfortable place with that, I don't think that I would be interested in opening up the relationship so that I could explore that. I think that would probably open up a can of worms for me in other ways, because I am monogamous, and the idea of not being monogamous doesn't sound fun to me. It sounds stressful, actually. So I get it, and I would probably feel the same way. I think there are probably a lot of people that would be like, oh, well, you still can explore it. Like, just explore an open relationship or take a break from your relationship. But when you're in love with someone and you found someone that you want to spend the rest of your life with, it's like, well, I don't want to do that. I want to be with this person. I found the love of my life. We are married. I am happy in our relationship. But there is a side of me that longs for, you know, an era of my life where I could have explored this side of myself. And now I don't want to. I don't want to, you know, go out of the confines of this relationship because I'm comfortable with our arrangement and I love them. And that's sort of it. And I think all of these things are allowed to exist at once. You're allowed to know with certainty that you are monogamous and you want to keep it that way. And you're also allowed to know with certainty that there is a part of you that mourns the era of life you could have had you have been comfortable with your bisexuality before you met this love. And I totally understand this feeling and pressure of, like, you know, feeling like you can't own the term bisexual until you have a romantic or sexual experience with a woman. I used to feel the exact same way. For so long, I never brought up my bisexuality to people because I felt like I needed to prove something. Like, I needed to prove to people that I was really bisexual. And I felt like until I had had sex with a woman, that I couldn't really say that. And to be honest with you, that feeling followed me until I did have sex with another queer person. And I look back at it now and I'm like, I was bisexual the whole time. I could have said it at any fucking time. I didn't need to wait until I had gone down on a woman to say this part out loud. But that was my insecurity at the time. And I think that that's something that a lot of bisexual people feel, feeling like you have to prove that you are bisexual enough. I would really recommend reading the book Greedy by Jen Winston, which is a nonfiction book by Jen Winston about her experience with her own bisexuality. And when I read that book, I read it shortly before I started talking about being bisexual on the internet. And it was something that really made me feel more comfortable owning the label of bisexual and feeling like I was bisexual enough. Not feeling like I had to prove something or that I needed to fit within some perfect box of what it means to be a bisexual and what you need to look like, what you need to act like, what your vibe needs to be, what your experience level has to be, or any of that. So if you haven't read that book, I do recommend it, because for me, it did really open doors in terms of how I was feeling, how confident I was feeling about sharing my sexuality with people. I think so often, because we put the pressure on queer people to come out, to announce to everyone that they are queer, that this is my identity, this is who I'm attracted to. Because we put all of that pressure on queer people, there exists this bar to reach in terms of proving your sexuality that we would never put on straight people, right? Like, the first time I remember having a crush on a boy was in the second grade. I didn't have my first kiss until I was out of high school. I didn't have sex for the first time until I was in college. I didn't start dating until I was in college. At no point in time throughout any of the years before I had sex and started actually dating men, did anyone ever question me or interrogate me about my attraction to men? Are you sure you really like men? You've never kissed one. You've never had sex with one. You've never dated one. So how do you know that you like men? Really? You're sure you like men? I don't believe you. You've never dated or had sex with one. You've never been romantically or sexually involved with a man. So how would you know you're attracted to one? Nobody ever said that to me. Because why would they? We live in such a heteronormative world. People are very eager to accept the idea of straightness. Man and woman, it was never questioned. There was never a world where I had to prove to people that I was straight, or that me having a romantic or sexual relationship with a man was the thing that finally made me attracted to men. That was the thing that proved it. And before I was romantically or sexually involved, then how could I possibly know? We never treat heterosexual attraction with that kind of energy. So why do we bring it to homosexual attraction? Why do we force queer people to go through this exhausting and not straightforward, complicated process of having to come out and announce yourself to the world and prove that you've ticked a certain amount of boxes to really prove that you are bisexual enough, that you are gay enough, you are queer enough? I don't think that you have to prove anything to anyone. Coming out, it's kind of a dated concept. You don't need to be romantically or sexually involved with someone to know that you are attracted to them. You don't have to tick off experiences, collect all of these things to show off to other people and prove to them that you are bisexual enough. Because the thing is, like, if you feel comfortable in your current relationship, you are happy, you have no desire to open it up, the only reason that you would feel like you had to be romantically or sexually involved with a woman in order to be bisexual enough is for other people. That's not for you, because you feel happy with how your life currently is. You feel content. You feel satisfied. If you didn't feel that way, we'd be having a different conversation. But you feel content in your current relationship with how your life currently is. And you can mourn the, you know, potential for a life that could have been, the kind of exploration that won't end up happening because of this. But any pressure that you feel to, you know, reject this label until you have a romantic or sexual relationship with a woman is not for you. It's for other people. It's satisfying other people's idea of what it means to be the perfect bisexual, or what it means to, like, truly come out and be accepted as a person in that community, to prove that you are a part of that community. This whole idea of, like, proving our sexuality to people, coming out, being bisexual enough, it is lame. We would never do that with heterosexual attraction. So we shouldn't do it with this either, because it's not fucking fair. You are just as much a bisexual as anyone else is, and fuck anyone that's going to make you try to prove your sexuality and discount your experience as a bisexual person because the timeline in which you've experienced self-discovery in tandem with meeting your current partner. Fuck anyone that's going to make you feel bad for that or make you feel like you don't have a place here because of that. You're still bisexual. You don't have to prove that to me or to anyone else. And anyone that is trying to make you prove that is a weirdo freak. Dude, who knew we were doing a little Pride episode today? Honestly, I didn't even really intend for this to be the Pride episode, but here we are, and I'm not mad about it. So thanks for hanging out. If you'd like to hang out some more, come watch the after show over on Patreon, where I'm going to talk about some other things that have pissed me off this week. God, Strike 2 may be happening on the Patreon. I didn't realize that, you know, we talked about Strike 1 with the movie talking, but I fear Strike 2 has already happened. It's not looking good, okay? I may be going nuclear before the end of the month. So keep your eyes and ears peeled. Watch this space, okay? Big things coming. Love you guys so much. I'll see you next week.